I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. Hey, Siri, how many days until the 2024 NFL draft?
Okay, I found this on the web. Check it out.
29 days, 23 hours, 59 minutes, 55 seconds from when we started recording. It's so close. We talk about this, I feel like, every other show, but it's so baffling how, like, the countdown to the draft, not a game, not a preseason, the countdown to when you start selecting your rookies, I count down more than opening day for hockey, opening day for NBA, more than my anniversary, more than my birthday, but the draft just feels like you anticipating it, like you want it. Your cats again?
Yeah.
And your cats are excited.
Hey, man, you need to chill, bro.
It sounded like they dropped a beer mug.
No, he's messing with my fucking belt buckle. Sit down.
Just swiping at it like it smells like a rat.
Yeah, he's freaking this guy.
Do your cats go at it when they know we're on air? Or are they like,
he's messing with this. I'm going to hit him with this, what I'm going to do.
That'll teach him.
That'll learn you.
Do I rub his nose in it?
No, I'll just smack him with it.
So question of the day. We haven't done one of these in a while, but I felt a good time to do it. Let us know down in the comments. On a scale of 1 to 10, how desperate are the Raiders for a quarterback in the 2024 NFL draft? And I chose all of these words purposefully. Because I asked you this question last show. And you're like, well, I don't like the word desperate. So I'm like, okay, well, let's use the word desperate and see how we are. And I also specifically in this draft, not desperate for a franchise quarterback, not desperate for a big name quarterback, for a quarterback in the 2024 NFL draft. Because as a general rule, if you don't have a franchise quarterback, you are desperate for a franchise quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's basic. There's very, very few teams that qualify that don't have a franchise quarterback and aren't desperate for a while. Like maybe you could be like, yeah, Kirk Cousins, I guess, could get you the year or two, but you still definitely, definitely want one, a quarterback in the future, all this kind of thing. So as a general rule, if you don't have a franchise quarterback, and some members of Raider Nation think Farva is franchise quarterback. We don't think he is.
They may end up being right. He just hasn't shown us. He hasn't shown me enough.
Some people are so optimistic on Aiden O'Connell. They're like, no, he is our franchise quarterback. We're set. That's not this podcast, but if you do, we're willing to hear you out and tell you you're wrong. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Soto, using the word desperate, how desperate are the Raiders to get a quarterback out of this draft coming up in 29 days?
If we're using the word desperate, I would say like a 2 or 3, because I don't know that we're desperate. I think that they want to take a quarterback, and they will take a quarterback sometime in this draft. Mm-hmm. For a lot of the reasons that you said, it's one of the perfect scenarios to take a quarterback at any time. You have a quarterback that you're comfortable with, which is Farva. You have a quarterback that you like that you brought in to compete, which is Uncle Rico. So you got those two guys. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can bring a guy in and he is not going to be thrust into the starting spot because you're comfortable with the guys you already have. So it's not imperative that we take one with our first round pick.
I thought Rory put it perfectly on our text chain. He's like, we're horny for a franchise quarterback. Like, I think that's the most accurate way to put it. It's we have quarterbacks in play. We're not as desperate as probably almost a dozen teams that just have really nothing. We have one guy that's played, a veteran that's gotten a team to the playoffs, and we've got a second year player that could make. We're anticipating some bigger improvements, even though we think his ceiling isn't very high. I think we're just horny for one. You know what I mean? It's like It's like the captain of the cheerleading team just broke up with her boyfriend 2 weeks before the prom. We're like, okay, like we could shoot our shot. We're fine going with, you know, the girl next door to the prom. Like we can still go to the prom with the girl next door. Like we'll still go there and have a good time and probably get, you know, a raw hand job in the limo on the way back. But if we can get the captain of the cheerleading team, like it's a thin shot. So I'm a little higher up on the desperate. I'm more like 4 because I want it bad.
Don't get me wrong. I want one. I just don't know that the way the team is looking at it from that perspective. I don't know that, because I really do think the AP and the coaching staff is very comfortable with Farva moving forward for the short term.
I think Telesco, especially picking up Minshew, was like, we don't have to go into this draft with, you know, getting somebody who we think is to be a franchise quarterback right away.
Yeah, we don't have to get they're prepared. Yeah,
they're prepared in the event that you don't get what every team wants, a franchise quarterback. So I think we're a little, you know, 4 or 5-ish on the desperation scale, because we're really horny for that one. And I think also because we're in the Raider bubble looking out, I think sometimes we lose perspective on being on the outside looking into the Raider bubble. Dan Patrick, I was listening to a show this morning, actually made a pretty good point. He's like, of all the teams and all the positions about what's going to happen at quarterback, he's most intrigued about the Raiders. Because you know, like 1, 2, and 3 is going to be quarterback. Someone, probably the Vikings, going to trade for 4. You know, then what's going to happen with Penix and Nix? And then, you know, maybe, you know, rounds 3 or 4 or something when the rest of the quarterbacks come in. The Raiders, it's like you hear reports that come out and say Raiders plan on trading down. Raiders plan on trading up. Jalen wants to be a Raider. They're just going to stay put. They got Gardner Minshew. I think there's probably 20 other NFL teams, you know, a dozen or so NFL teams looking at quarterbacks that are wondering, like, shit, what are the Raiders going to do? Like, if we try to trade up to 14, is our guy going to be there because the Raiders pick him? If we trade to 10, is that going to be good enough? Are they going to trade to 9 to get their guy? Are they going to shoot a Hail Mary and give the Pats a shot at getting Jaden Daniels? Like, I think the rest of the league is with Dan Patrick wondering what's going to happen with the Raiders. We don't think that way because we're the Raiders. We don't care what that's going on. But I think 31 other teams are like, all right, here's all our contingencies based on this wild card from Las Vegas in Telesco's first year in the Silver and Black.
And that feeling is all about Telesco. They have a player. We have a player now, a guy who has the relationships, who's been known to make these deals happen. We have a guy that knows how to get this stuff done. And I think because we haven't for so long, we've had, you know, first-time GMs or coaches who were GMs or stuff. We had just recycling all that stuff. We didn't have the guy that had those relationships with the other GMs in the league. We didn't have that guy. So now that we can say, okay, we have a veteran guy who knows what he's doing, who has relationships, who's been known to make this stuff happen, we're so wide open because, yeah, we're in the position where do we want an upgrade at quarterback? Of course we do. Are we desperate for one? No, because I think we're comfortable. If it doesn't pan out that way, we're comfortable with who we have right now and maybe dropping the guy later, picking a guy next year or whatever. But then we're not going to make a stupid move. And I think other teams know that, so they can't take advantage because, you know, the John Grudens and all those freaking dudes, we can fleece this guy. We don't have to worry about him and Mayock, like, you know. Or we can lie to him and screw him up and say, oh, we'll trade for your number 4 pick. It's like, no, we won't. Now you're screwed, right? What are you going to do? So they're not going to be able to pull one over on us now because Telesco's been around.
It's and even when you and I, because when the news broke that Gardner Minshew got signed by the Raiders, you and I had exact opposite takes initially. We kind of, as time went on, talked about it. We started kind of seeing each other eye to eye. But you're like, oh, it looks like we're not drafting anybody. And I thought, that's exactly opposite. I think Minshew's the type of veteran you bring in when you're drafting someone and letting them develop, have a veteran in the room, all that kind of stuff. So if even you and I could have can read each other's minds at this point. We basically like think the same, like we know what each other is going to think about something. We both read the same stuff, talk about it constantly. We're generally on the same page. If you and I had exact opposite takes on the signing of Gardner Minshew, imagine what the other 31 teams are thinking. Like, oh,
serious, yeah.
All the different ways, which is great. Which is also actually awesome. Like, it's nice that the other teams are on pins and needles waiting for what we're going to do instead of like, all right, which shitty guard are they going to spend their sixth overall pick on? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like, definitely not that anymore.
Past regimes, you know?
Well, I think what I was leaning more towards was we're not going to – it's not a given that we're going to go full force in the first round anymore.
Yeah.
Because we're comfortable with the guys that we have, that they're going to be able to run our system. They're going to be able to tread water. Maybe we catch lightning in the bottle later. You never know what happens. Mahomes goes down. He gets bad case of herpes or whatever happens. He can't play. Something happens weird where we end up winning the division with 10, maybe 11 wins because of some fluke business, right?
Yeah.
We have guys that can go in there and play the game and with a lot of stuff falling our way can end up doing something. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, okay, it's not like we're putting all our eggs on the Favre basket. We have another guy who is going to push them, maybe take the lead, whoever, but we're comfortable and it's not imperative. Like we're not the Bears who traded away all our quarterbacks or the Commanders who traded away all our quarterbacks or, you know, even New England who, depending on, we'll get to this later, but depending on how you think they feel about Jacoby Brissett, they're not desperate for a quarterback. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Vikings desperate for a quarterback. We're not that. So that the signing of Uncle Rico kind of made it a little bit more stabilized, maybe not as high as a bar, but a little more stable position at quarterback.
And also it's like a weird kind of like we want to win now, but it's not like we're, you know, like all in like a night.
We're not old. We're not an old team.
Right. We're not old, but like we're coming off like a bad offense, but the defense came out of nowhere and was phenomenal. Is the defense like that here to stay? You know, we're all hoping so, but it was just, you know, it was nine games. Like, you know, it's not like we're the Ravens, right? Where it's like two decades of great defense. We can count on having a great defense. It's like, God, I hope so, but it can very easily have been a fluke. So it's like,
watch my Christian Wilkins video. If you haven't already, this dude's special, man. I see our defense being just as good.
He ran down Hunter Renfro 30 yards,
31 yards down the field. I couldn't believe it.
So it's all the combination of like Telesco with AP. What's the decision making process going to be? How much are we pushing our chips in? Right? How win now mode does this regime want to be? They say they are, but you know that comes with a price.
Everyone says they are. Oh, we're going to win as many games as we can.
You know, and I think and if you or I are super baffled, the other 31 GMs are probably super baffled too, which is good. Let's keep them baffled. Let's keep our cards close to our vest and. I think the draft will be finally like a very telltale sign of how this regime feels about when now, when later, whatever. So let us know. Comment section on a scale 1 to 10. How desperate are the Raiders for a quarterback in the 2024 NFL draft? Speaking of drafts, let's mock it up.
Mock it up, baby.
Let's mock it up. So Soto, you did your homework. We asked you, as if like there's a mouse in my pocket. Give us three mock drafts, one of them where you trade up, one of them where you trade down, one of them where you stay put. Did you go into these drafts before we show them? Did you go into these mock drafts saying, all right, this is the draft where I trade up, this is the draft where I trade down, this is the draft where I stay, or is that how the draft fell to you, and so you decided mid-draft to make your moves? Which one was it?
I had to do it ahead of time, okay? Because the draft, the trade up draft, I had to do it beforehand, and you'll see why. So I had to go into it in my mind of this is what I want to do. Mm. And the other two, I just kind of let it play out. The one that I didn't do anything, I didn't trade any picks at all. That one, I just kind of like, okay, weighing best player available plus position of need. And then going into later in the rounds, okay, who fits? What is the type of player we're looking for at the positions that are available? And you see some overlap because I like those players at those spots, but only one time did I make a pre-decision of I'm going to trade up in this draft.
Okay, we'll start with the premeditated and the sexy one.
Ooh.
The trade up. All right.
Yep.
You got up to pick number 7 overall in round number 1 by trading with the Titans. He gave him number 13 overall, a third rounder, and a sixth rounder to move up 6 spots.
A sixth rounder next year.
Sixth rounder next year.
Yeah.
That seems like we kind of fleeced the Titans a little bit, getting 6 spots for just a late third, but possible. Like, you could pull that off. I think I'd be very happy if that's what we got, if that was our trade setup.
Well, it's not a late third. You're still in like the top third, like the top half of the third round.
So yeah, a third. I'd be stoked if we got that. So let's say we move up to 7, right? We're inching our way up. We're like, oh, why are they going to 7? Do they think someone's going to fall? No, but wait, there's more. Moving up 4 spots to number 3, costing us that 7th round pick, round 1 next year, and round 2 next year. So more, we basically got from number 13 to number 3, and it cost us this one, next year's 1, next year's 2, this year's 3, and some change.
Yeah.
Not having to use 3 firsts to get into the top 3 is monumental if we can pull that off.
Yeah.
That's a monumental coup if we can pull that off. Getting that third with the number 7, a round 1 and a round 2, I'm just wondering if other teams would beat us to that for that number 3 to get Jane Daniels, right? In this one, it was, you know, Caleb and May, or May and Caleb, whatever, doesn't matter.
It was Caleb at first, May.
Caleb, May. Yeah. All right. To get Jane Daniels, I'm wondering how many other teams would beat that offer.
Yeah. You'd have to really like them a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And I don't know that this is like me saying, okay, how am I going to get Jane Daniels? That was my mindset going in. How am I going to get this player? I initially made the trade to number 7. So this is, I was kind of playing around with you earlier today on the text chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm playing Telesco and the others, right? So yeah. Telesco texting New England, like, hey, how do you feel? How comfortable are you with Jacoby Brissett? How much do you like him? Belichick left the cupboard pretty bare. They don't have a lot of talent. They don't have a lot of explosive players there in New England. They need a lot to be competitive. Okay, now that that's there, how comfortable are you with Jacoby Brissett? And if I can bring you a top 10 pick and some other stuff, would you consider trading out of the number 3 spot?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you got? All right, so who is the team that we know for sure is going to be – is settled at the quarterback position, is going to want – The Chargers are going to want to trade with us, okay? And I don't know that we're going to be able to move up for as little as we gave up to go to like 4 or 5. So I said, okay, let's go 7. Let's go up maybe, you know, a handful, 6 spots to 7 with the Titans. And, hey, what do you guys think about doing a pick swap, but we'll give you another top, you know, 80 pick, and we'll give you something next year. What do you feel about that? Maybe we have to throw a player in, you know, or something like that. And I use that to get in position to be able to say to the Pats, okay, I got this set up. I can get you 7, and we'll do 1 and 2 next year. Will you give us that 3? And
if we could pull this scenario off, I am jerking off on the live show. Like, this would be great because it's fault. We're getting the guy we want. We're following my rule. We're just using 2 drafts of first round picks. So if he doesn't pan out, we try again in 3 drafts, right? To try to get the next guy. We're not giving up the entire future for Jane Daniels. So we've got 2 drafts of first round picks to get him. This would be fun. This would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it might end up having to be like a 1 and a 2, and maybe that's it. Maybe not the 6 next year. But it'll have to be a first and a second this year to move up to number 7 to be able to do that. It could end up being that. And if that happens, I mean, it's a little heavier, but it's something that we can work around. And I think if we're able to get the guy that we want at quarterback, I think it's something that it's definitely possible.
All right, so you made four total trades in this one. You don't have to go through every single guy, but walk me through the highlights of the rest of this draft, because you got a lot of, got two fifth rounders, a couple seventh rounders, traded down here and there.
Yeah, so the main thing I wanted to do is I wanted to get the guy that we're comfortable with, the guy that we feel is going to be the one that we can hang our hat on for the next 10, 15 years, but not mortgage a ton and backfill some of those picks this year and next year. So we took Jaden Daniels at 3. We had the number 44 pick. We ended up flipping that to Philly for 50, 97, 160 this year and then a 5 next year. So we're kind of replenishing that. We've traded that 6 away, but now we're getting a 5 back for trading back 6 spots. So we were still able to get Chop Robinson. Not a huge need for us, but him still being there, I don't think he's going to be there at 50, but he was there. And I said, okay, I can't pass up getting a player like him to put on that defense. Like the Ravens, oh, they're getting another pass rusher because you get a cheap pass rusher and you're able to let other guys go because you have good, young, cheap talent, and you're able to keep that replenished and have a thick line that you can just rotate guys like hockey in and out, in and out, yeah, in and out, always fresh. So went that. The Cam Hart was a little bit of a reach at 97. The reason why I like him, you're going to see I have a little bit of a fetish for tall, long-arm DBs. Mm. Cam Hart's like 6'2", super long arms, tough player. So gritty player, smart player, went to Notre Dame. Long, tall, that's what I'm looking for with my DBs. Cooper Beebe, I would be surprised if he's there at 119, but we did a little bit of a trade back, just a couple of spots with Seattle. The main thing for that is I wanted to get another pick next year. I wanted to not give up too much now, but I wanted to, when we traded back, we did a pick swap basically for our fourth and sixth round picks. We went back 6 spots, and then we went back 4 spots in the 6th round. But we got that extra 4th for next year. So we're fortifying that we gave up 1 and 2 next year, but we're kind of giving ourselves a little bit more to work with next year as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper Beebe was one of the – he was the best interior offensive lineman available. And I think if you add in the centers, he's probably still in the top 5-6 of interior offensive linemen in the entire draft. So to pick him – you know, past pick 100, I think it's going to solidify it. And it's a spot of need, too. Logan Lee's just a big corn-fed white boy who can go out there and get it done. I like him a lot. Walter Rouse, he's a right tackle. You know, maybe younger, maybe he starts, maybe he doesn't. But you got a guy who can kind of flip around in there and get some playing time. You guys know I love Frank Gore Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Marcellus Dial is, again, a long, tall, tough DB. And then I can't say his name, but I saw him play at Oregon State. He may turn into a linebacker, but he's pretty freaking big. He's like 6'3". He's pretty big dude.
You picked the last two just because they had sweet names. Admit it. by that point, you're just going like, all right.
Kitan Oladapo. Kitan Oladapo was big, dude. He's a big dude.
So in this one, we went trading up, getting a quarterback, getting in the top 3, and then making it up with volume on the back end. On this one, traded down, going all volume. Traded with Green Bay. We traded back from 13 down to 25. Picked up another second, third, fourth, fifth rounder. Gave up another fourth and a fifth. So picked up an extra 2 and 3. Flopped the 4s and 5s, and we loaded up basically everything but quarterback until we get to round 5.
Yeah, so this was in this draft.
Completely different players. You only picked one of the same guy in Frank Gore Jr.
With how Cooper Beebe, too.
Okay.
Cooper Beebe, yeah. Too. Cooper. And Marcellus Dial. Sorry. I don't want to step all over your shit. But what I did in this one is there's none of the guys that I wanted were there. Mm. So I said, you know what? What am I going to do? Top 4 quarterbacks. It's like the same thing as before. The as you can see in the next one.
If you were forced to pick number 13 in this draft, who would it have been? Like, do you remember who was available? Four quarterbacks were gone. I'm sure two receivers.
It probably would have been the guy I picked the next one. Right, okay. Just staying put. It would have been that guy. I'm not gonna say who it is. It's gonna be that guy.
Okay.
But when I picked at 13, when I was up, the top four quarterbacks were gone, the top three receivers were gone, the top two receivers were gone, the top three tackles were gone, mm-hmm. and the top two edge rushers and the top two corners were gone. That's 12 players. We're mm-hmm. already off the board. So it's like, okay, do I want to get the third best receiver at 13 when I roll? Don't really need him that much. I need someone who's going to impact my team right now. So I said, you know what? Let me trade back and see who's available. They gave it. I was able to make this trade work, getting an extra two and an extra three for dropping 12 spots, but now and then just doing pick swaps for round four and five. That's what I was able to do. Nate Wiggins was still there. I jumped all over it. Long-armed. Again, tall, long-armed DB. Good production.
Don't let anyone tell you like girth.
I like length, baby. Length at my DBs. That's what I like. Peyton Willis, both. He's 6'3", like 235, 240, tackling machine. The worst part of his game is probably in coverage, but he's still pretty good at that. Braden Fisk, very similar to Lee that we got last, but just a little bit more explosive. Just a big, huge defensive interior lineman. The best player available at that time, I felt. So I went and got him. Blake Fisher on the opposite side of Alt at Notre Dame. So the big-time pass rushers, I don't want to go against the freaking top tackle in the league. I want to go against the other guy. And the other guy still did a pretty damn good job. Next one, Rory's going to love this one. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., he is like the opposite of the Peyton Wilson at linebacker. The best part of his – he's the best coverage linebacker in this draft by a lot. Super fast, not that big, needs to be learn how to take on tackles a little bit better, but great in coverage. Cooper Beebe was there, took him, and here's the big one. Joe Milton was there at 169. He probably is not going to be there after his pro day because he's just wild out. But this is the type of player you take – later in the draft when you have two steady Eddies that you like at quarterback. You don't take another steady Eddie guy. You take a guy that has elite traits that you have to teach other things to, and they have the time to teach him because you're comfortable with the quarterbacks you already have.
You're buying a super lotto ticket. You're not buying a scratcher.
No. And he's not that far away, man. So, again, Frank Gore – Marcellus Dial's there. And then Brandon Coleman was available. He's tackle or guard. Just depth at the offensive line.
All right. Now staying put. Ironically, had the least amount of picks. 8 picks at staying put.
Yeah, so this was the pick. That same thing happened as the previous draft, the previous mock. All those players were already gone. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to sit here and get the best player that I feel is available. Which was Quinyon Mitchell, the corner out of Toledo, which, I mean, I'm not going to hate it. Another long, tough corner, did really well in the Senior Bowl. Again, Peyton Wilson is another retread from the last draft. We already talked about him. Patrick Paul, super athletic.
Underestimate the good corner pick. I mean, that between, like, with our new defensive interior and a new number one corner picked first, I mean, it's... We can always improve, obviously, the defense, but there's no holes anymore in the defense. There's no more holes. There's no more like, oh man, like that. We know where offensive coordinators are going to go because there's a hole there. Like, well, if a rookie corner pans out, there's no holes in the defense anymore.
For sure, you're not going to see like a deficit anywhere. Patrick Pollock, like I was saying, was, you know, just the best player I saw at the time. Mm-hmm. Didn't get a very high grade, but I like him as a player. I think he had some injuries earlier in his career, but he's come back from that. Tackle or guard, he's mammoth. Kind of like the guys that the road graders, the guys that AP likes. He wants to run the ball a lot. He wants to do a lot of power run. This is going to be the guy to do it. Chris Abrams-Drain, he's not as tall, but he's lanky. He's long, and he played in a big time conference, and he did really well. Here we go. Interesting pick. Jordan Travis was available at 148. If Jordan Travis didn't blow his ACL out this season, he'd be a second round pick. No problem. Think of the arm he has. He has a Farva arm, whereas the velocity, the accuracy, he's just not as consistent with it. But what he does have is by far and away way better than Farba. He is on par. Once he gets healthy and everything, he's one of the best scrambling quarterbacks in this draft, bar none. He was, I mean, the reason why Florida State was as good as they were was because of him. The big knock on him is his arm strength. He doesn't have the big-time arm. He has everything else, the leadership. He has the mobility. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. So if we can get him, and again, the league knows we don't need these guys to play right away. Mm-hmm. So we can get him, and we can get him healthy, get him used to taking snaps under center, to turning his back to the defense on play action, stuff like that. So Jordan Travis was the pick there. We saw,
and he has two first names, like Ricky Bobby.
So like Ricky Bobby. Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. We got Frank Gore again because he was there, and I love him. Marcellus Dial again. I love those big, long corners. I love these guys. And also, at the end, Keith Randolph Jr. was just a guy that I saw, mammoth kid. We don't need him right away, but at the seventh-round pick, he's like 6'5", 310, athletic kid. So we can get him behind Jenk, behind Butler, behind Wilkins, maybe behind Wilson as well if he stays there at tackle. You get him to learn for a year or two, and then, you know, he breaks off his third year.
So that's it. Three different drafts. Other shows will just give you one. We'll give you three. A trade up, a trade down, and a stay put. Thank you, Soto. Well done. 29 days away. So the big news in the NFL in general was the new kickoff rule. And make no mistake, this is a giant,
big massive deal.
Change. Like, this is the game. The game will be unrecognizable. When kickoff strike, the obviously very first play of the game, like it's going to be unrecognizable. This very first play, like there's a lot of rule changes, and you're like, oh, I hate how they can't hit quarterbacks. Oh, I hate how they got rid of the, you know, you can't have a wedge anymore. And like, there's all these rules where it's like, well, what's the catch? What isn't? And it like kind of pops up here and there, you know, and it's annoying when it pops up. But this is going to make the game look completely different from the very first play. You probably know most of the details on it, but basically the rule is. Kickoff points, 30 to 35 yard line, and the kick coverage and kick return teams are just 5 yards apart. And you can't go until the ball's kicked and lands, and then you go. So instead of having, you know, the kickoff return
40 yard freaking head start, right?
Dead sprint just being missiles, they're like, all right, let's have these guys collide with only a 5 yard barrier. So they're not at top speed colliding into each other, kind of more. It's more contact, less collision. It's more sumo wrestling than getting shot out of a cannon, which is their philosophy. Ironically, it passed 29-3. I want to guess what side the Raiders were on. they bet against it. This is something that the NFL rarely does well, changing rules. Like the hip drop tackle. It's like if you're a small corner, how are you tackling a tight end? If not, like... You can't tackle high. You can't tackle low. Now you can't do the hip drop. It's like normally the NFL changes rules for safety. A, they don't care. They're just trying to not get sued 20 years from now.
Yeah, they just don't want to get sued.
CTE cases start coming up. So they don't care, but they have to like pretend that they care. And when they normally pass these rules, it's just like, all right, you can't do that anymore. We don't care if the game sucks now. This time there were three special team coordinators in the NFL that came and saved this. Where they're like, look, if you're just going to get rid of kickoffs, let us get in the lab and cook something up. And this is part XFL. This type of thing was used in like some like junior college leagues to kind of like test it, see how it panned out, that kind of thing. And they actually came up with something creative for a change. This is the NFL's best example of making a perfect bad rule. They did a bad rule correctly. This is stupid. Just let them do the kickoff. But if you're gonna neuter it, they allowed these special teams coordinators to at least be creative and make something that could be fun. It won't be as fun as a kickoff, but it's better than just like, all right, the offense starts on the 25-yard line.
Yeah. All 11 kickoffs in the Super Bowl were none of them were returned. So it's just kind of a that's what in the biggest stage all that stuff gets highlighted. But, man, I hated that wedge, dude. I hated that wedge. I hated wedge breaking. I hated it. I hated it, hated it, hated it.
I loved it. Oh, I loved it. The craziest guy on your team was always the wedge buster. The dude that had, like, the biggest neck roll, The guy that like smashed his head against the locker in pregame to get like jacked up. That was always your wedge bust. The Justin Gaethje of your football team.
Just going horizontal right into it.
Face blow that thing up. That was the way to go. So, I, you know, best case, like, look, I've already given up on the NFL doing the right thing, but at least they did the wrong thing correctly. Because, you know, these special teams coordinators are like, dude, if we don't do something, we're going to become extinct. Like, the NFL is trying to get rid of special teams. They're trying to get rid of defense, but they're trying to get rid of special teams first. If we don't cook something up, we're not going to have a job. And so they're like, here, here's at least this, like, creative way to do it. And they made it. And this is, like, gives the option for it to be overly complicated. Like, it's going to be actual plays. Like, normally special teams, like, kickoff return, it's like, are we going left or are we going right? Like, that's 90% of it. And there's, you know, there's details to how they do things. And every special teams coordinator will say, like, oh, ours is different. It's like, you're basically, you're going left or you're going right. That's 90% of the time. Now it's going to be, like, plays. Like, you're going to have guys, like, basically, like, pulling. Are we running, like, a version of, like, an ISO? Are we, you know what I mean? It's like, you've got basically, like, nine linemen and two running, because you have two returnmen. Nine linemen and two running backs. What kind of running play can you cook up with something like that? So it's going to be anarchy. And I kind of like watching things burn, because there's going to be some teams that cook up something awesome. They cook up something great. And
there's,
they're going to have
minds. They just sit there in their nerdery and just cook something up.
Nerd off, right? There are going to be some games. Teams that have no business beating other teams are going to, because they're going to get like two kickoff returns for a touchdown because they're running a play that some special teams coordinator was not ready for.
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
Something like that. Like, I was watching Ted Wynn of The Athletic did a really good article on, like, kind of explaining like the rules and shit. But then he's like, look, here's some of like the plays that they've done. And there's basically like, they did one where there was a reverse where two, I keep calling them linemen. That's basically what they are. Two linemen were basically pulling, but everyone else went right. So the coverage team kind of covered it. They did a reverse and they had the two pulling linemen just kind of guide him. That was a touchdown. They got all these like different, like, imagine like, look, go to a, I feel like offensive line coach should get involved here. Be like, look, basically think of it this way. You got nine linemen, two running backs. What kind of running plays would you cook up? That's essentially what you're doing, just with your running back, you know, 13 yards in the backfield.
Yeah, you get first color, you get second color through. Easy, easy, easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I think it's a good compromise. It's a good compromise because the reward of getting it right is points. Like, and it's a little bit easier. Or the percentage of it would be a little bit higher of return because of that kind of enticement. You know, you're getting enticed to go ahead and return it because the probability of returning it for a touchdown is higher. You don't get the, you know, full speed ahead collisions anymore. And you don't render that play irrelevant anymore.
And I just, again, to reiterate, because it's that important to do so, this is the rare instance where the NFL is like, oh, it's for safety. And instead of just taking something away and making the game shittier, it's, we know you're not going to like this, but here's at least something else. It's like, hey, I ordered a ribeye. Sorry, we don't have it. Here's a New York steak instead. It's like, okay, it's not what I wanted, but I can make this work. As opposed to normally, they're just like, yeah, you get no ribeye. You're just going to starve. It's like, no, you can't touch the quarterback. No,
put
you can't.
Put some sauteed mushrooms on and you got a deal.
Right? It's like now, yeah, exactly. It's just like, all right, we can't give you the ribeye, but we'll give you this New York Oscar style with a little crab on it. You know what I mean? Which, okay, like, let me.
Can we blue cheese crust it or something? Like, give me a little give and take here.
Yeah, that's what those three special teams coordinators were doing. It's like, all right, let's, instead of having, like, you know, a Wagyu steak, let's really, really gussy up this $11 steak. And I'm excited to see how it pans out, because it's a great opportunity for random teams with random minds to make big changes. Because, you know, you can't overly drastically change football, like on offense and defense. It's like too ingrained. You can't do something this great. On special teams, you can kind of pull it off. On one version of special teams, right? On just kickoff, we can drop a nuke in how it's done and have it not completely alter the entire game, right? It's just kickoff, right? There's what, six or seven in a game, usually something like that. So it's And we can say player safety, and it's a chance to be creative. I'm genuinely looking forward to it.
I'm intrigued. I don't know if I'm looking forward to it, but I'm intrigued. See what it'll look like.
I'm looking forward to it if we're really good at it. Right? Like if the Raiders get some kind of like secret sauce.
You think maybe us voting against it was like kind of like a smoke screen? Yeah. Like, man, I hope this doesn't pass.
How much faith do you have in Tom McMahon, our special teams coach, to come up with, like, if it was Bisaccia, I'd be like, hell yeah. Like, this is the more power we can give our special teams coordinator, the better off we are, right? Like, if the league creates a rule that makes our special teams coach, like, his mind matter more, if it was Bisaccia, he'd be stoked. McMahon, I don't know. I haven't been, like, disappointed or wowed by him. He's basically just like, all right, here's the best kicking unit in football. Do it, you know, don't screw it up. And he hasn't, right? It's just like, you just get out of AJ's way and just let him be AJ, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we'll be ready. I don't think there's too many different things that there's not going to be a lot of groundbreaking, like, oh my God, no one's ever thought of this before. There may be a couple things here and there, but for the most part, it's just going to come down to execution.
Speaking of the draft, we were talking about a little earlier. It's nice going in with a GM with a history of like sober picking. You know, we haven't heard like every single draft. What's the national discussion about the Raiders?
What are the Raiders going to do?
What are they going to do? What kind of crazy thing are the Raiders? They're so wacky. Oh, get your crazy meter ready for when they draft.
Gruden and Mayock played their cards close to the vest, but like the cards were flipped the wrong way. You know?
What was that? What was that movie, Maverick? When he was playing the guy, he's like holding him up the wrong way.
Yeah,
it's like, well, they were holding their cards close to their vest, but they were playing Go Fish when everyone else was playing Uno. That was the problem. Tom Telesco, great habits of drafting. Thank you, Arjun Menon, who put together a graph of
Jesus.
Draft capital allocation for every GM in their respective tenure with their top 100 picks. So there's three GMs that have yet to draft because they're first timers at Arizona, at Pittsburgh, at Tennessee. But the long storied run of how Tom Telesco drafted. And he's pretty much steady Eddie everywhere. He picked 5 linebackers, that's 15%. That's the most he's ever drafted. He picked 4 guards, 4 wide receivers. That's the second most. And then 3 safeties, 3 corners, 3 interior defensive linemen, 3 tackles, and then kind of just down from there. 1 quarterback, 1 running back. Never went too crazy at one position, right? Like, always kind of just kept everything pretty even where the needs were. Now, also remember, he didn't have to do a lot of quarterback drafting because he went from franchise quarterback to franchise quarterback. They weren't stuck in quarterback purgatory. They signed their best like defensive ends, right? Mac and what have you. So he didn't have to like keep going through that cycle as much as other players. What was your biggest takeaway when you looked at who he likes to pick up and who he doesn't?
He did a lot of best player. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't always like the big 5 positions, but the players that he picked out of the big 5 positions, like the linebackers, like they all ended up being pretty good. Mm-hmm. So he's just a steady dude. He's a steady talent evaluator. He got the best position right, the most important position. He got it right. And he's, you know, the one year that he didn't have a line good enough to protect his quarterback, he fixed it the next season. Mm. The very next season, he fixed it in the first round. So it's the spread of the positions that he chose was a little encouraging, I think, to me, because you're not going to see him fall in love with the position and, yeah, you kind of have to take a look back at the composition of the team at the time he took those players
Yeah.
But it was positions that the guys came in and they contributed. So that's a highlight.
There's enough variables with each draft, because like you mentioned, the composition of the team, who was available in that draft, right? Was it a tackle heavy draft? Or is there like you just need a cornerback, but there were none in that draft? Like that all matters too. But he did go mostly linebacker, guard, wide receiver, one position we have plenty of, and two not very high positions that you should be drafting all that often, right? You shouldn't be drafting linebackers and guards very high. Any of that worry you at all? Or he's just gonna go like best position available. And maybe it's going to be a not pre, because you're always like, hey, premium positions are the only ones you draft high. Any concern at all that Telesco?
Not really. Not really. The linebacker thing and the linebacker position is changing recently, mm-hmm. So they're becoming. You don't need as many because you don't normally have as many on the field anymore. Mm-hmm. The guard is actually. I mean, one of the reasons why we signed Andre James is. We don't want to get another guard. Like the cards are getting big money, bro. So these guards are like the next wave of the tackles being paid is the guards are getting paid now because the pressure up the middle. So I wouldn't sleep on the guard position if a good one's available that can slot in right away and you can plug him in to be, you know, one of the top players in the league for years to come because he's good and he takes a position of need that's important and he's cheap. So I wouldn't necessarily pick a guy in the first round at where we are. Maybe if we trade back, we get a tackle that can play tackle and guard type of thing. But no, I wouldn't do that in the first round. But definitely, you know, rounds two and three. I mean, I did it. I picked a guy that can go, you know, switch back between the two.
He seems like the most boring GM ever, which is what we need. Not going crazy, not falling in love with guy and trading the house for it, not reaching for some random dude because you fell in love with them because of their ROTC scores. You know, it's like just did the homework, read the board, make your adjustments, play the best odds. Just basic standard issue, standard operating procedure. Don't overthink it. Just do your homework and go. Which is so opposite of how the Raiders have been for decades.
It seems like we have a calming, steadying influence at GM now. And I don't know that he's going to allow anyone to bully him into a position or a way of thinking or a strategy. I think he's got an idea of what he wants to do, a pretty clear idea of what he wants, incorporating what AP wants for the team. And I think, I mean, the buck's going to stop with him. And we've heard that. And Telesco's not going to be that kind of guy where he's going to be like, look, dude, I had owners just screwing with me left and right. I'm not doing that again. If it's going to be me, it's going to be me.
Well, we don't know if that's going to be the case because the Raiders might have another owner. Who likes to fiddle? The NFL has yet to approve Tom Brady's bid for the Las Vegas Raiders minority ownership, but Commissioner Roger Goodell is not concerned. He said on Tuesday during the NFL's annual league meeting, I wouldn't say it's a delay. We've got through a very thorough process. We're just going through our process. We've been in touch with their side. I think it's been making progress. Now, remember, Goodell is the son of a senator. He's politicking, right?
Politicking.
Why in the world politicking. Is marijuana, or why was it banned for so long in professional sports? For one reason and one reason only. It's a bargaining chip for ownership against the Players Association. That's the only reason. It's like, oh, you want to smoke pot? What are you going to give us? And the Players Association is like, nothing. You should just do it. So they're like, screw you.
Then nothing.
Of course not. Nothing. Of course not. Like we're not banning marijuana in this league because we're afraid of reefer madness, right? It's because you want it, and we want you to pay for it. That's what this feels like to me out of Roger Goodell. It's like, yeah, no, we're you know, no big deal. I'm sure it'll happen. We're just waiting for Mark Davis or Tom Brady or whoever to make some concessions to make it worth our while. We're not going to let you just come in here and be an owner. Even you, Tom Brady, Even you, Tom Brady. The only guys that swoop in and get what they want are the dudes with enormous truckloads of cash.
Yeah.
It's like, look, I'm going to build you SoFi Stadium. I'm going to build you the Taj Mahal, and you can move your corporate headquarters into there. Like, okay, Rams, there you go. Do what you want. You bought. You paid for it. Go ahead. Even Tom Brady has to kiss some rings, wave at some fans, get on the ticker tip parade, something like that. Like this sounds to me like he has to kiss some asses before he can be an owner in the NFL. To be just the third player to ever be an owner.
Well, yeah, you get like the GOAT, like the guy that many people think is the greatest quarterback ever to play. Definitely the most celebrated as far as championships go. You can't just hand it to him, you know what I'm saying? Like ex-supermodel, ex-wife. Money just falling out of his freaking ass crack. Like, all right, we got to make you just work for it a little bit so you appreciate it, you know?
Yeah. Tom Brady's not used to working for it. It's something he wants, you know what I mean? Like the ladies, you don't have to work for it normally. He's got to treat this like football, not like chicks. He's got to earn it.
Got to earn that shit.
We're doing some what up Quinn bags.
Why not?
BG Grissom. RJ teasing us with the studio and then never mentioning it again. In fairness, I mentioned it over and over and over and over. And then I stopped mentioning it ever again. So I'll give you guys the abbreviated version of it. Buddy of mine, we got together, pulled some resources. He was doing something. We had a great deal on a space where he was paying for like 2/3 of the gear. Another guy was paying for utilities, paying for the space, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm still with the guy. It wasn't like negative that happened. We're just pivoting the business model. And so, and also we realized like, you know, we're Soto works like 3 jobs. I work like 7. Like we're both super, I got like a kid. Like we're super, super busy. So for us to just be able to like click on Wednesday night and record from our homes, and then I can just bang it out and, you know, edit and stuff after, it's just so much easier than heading down to a studio, setting it all up. It does look super pro. It does look nice. Like if you look at the other like Raiders creators that have like huge amounts of followings, they all like really nice studios. And so that's why I was like, we have to have a nice studio. Like, well, I think we can make it work the way this is now. We still have the ability to go on the road. We still have the ability to be in the same room and do like a draft show. We still want to do watch alongs for the games next season. This is all still possible. We'll just be doing it at our home studios. For now.
Yeah, I mean, the shows themselves can be done like we're doing them now, but we have these one-offs where we want to do, there's a big game, you know, okay, let's see. We end up, we start the season 8-0, and we face another 8-0 team. All right, let's do a watch-along next week. Who's going to be in the area? We'll figure it out.
Also, we know how much you guys love Soto's cats, and if they weren't allowed in the studio.
Yeah, fuck these guys.
We weren't going to move. Want
we weren't going to move. So I moved my stuff around. I moved my living room around a little bit because I wanted to like just get some more space for activities, and apparently space for activities.
You got bunk cats. Beds.
Yeah, space for activities for my cats means just Royal Rumble, freaking cage matches, elimination chambers. They're using that space to just go at it and fight.
We're in the wrong business, man. We should just have your cats be in death matches and put that on YouTube.
As God, these guys, Raiders. Man. I had to pull them apart. Did I tell you about that? They were fighting, and I'm like, oh, great, they're fighting again. And then I heard, like, screams, like anger, growls, and, like, just, like really deep. I'm like, what the hell? I go over there, and they're just, like, just swatting each other. I see claws out. I'm like, oh, hell no. So I don't care about them getting hurt, but I'm seeing dollar signs. Like, every time I see their claws come out, oh, that's dollar signs.
It's a vet bill.
Yeah.
You got the insurance on those bitches?
Hell no. They're cats. So I pick them up and I'm like, hey, man, what the hell are you guys doing? And as I'm sitting there yelling at them, they're still swatting at each other. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's like cockfights. Like when they're fighting, you think they're dead. They pick them up and have them go like this before they go, put them down. Yeah. When I was in the Philippines, there was like just cockfighting on TV. I was just like, oh, my God. It's like
really good fried chicken, though, at those places.
Mm-hmm. Don Phillips, 4492. Max Crosby is more important to the Raiders than a quarterback. He sets the tone for the whole team. Any truth to that, Soto?
It depends on who the quarterback is. Is he more important to the team than Favre or Uncle Rico? Oh, yeah. Is he more important than like a franchise top tier quarterback? No. Mm-hmm. Not to wins and losses, at least.
I really wonder. I really do wonder. I'm with you, Soto, but I do wonder. Because if we, you know, God, I don't even like having this conversation, but like if we did lose Max Crosby, right? Like it's more than just his sacks and tackles that are gone. Like it is leadership, much, much more
example.
Those stats that disappeared, right? The way like everyone else benefits from him. Like you mentioned, example in the room, hardest worker. Everyone's just trying to catch up with Max Crosby. Like, we're ending this conversation now before it gets out of hand. He's not going anywhere ever. He's going to play for 100 years and always be great. And he'll.
It's like our pets. You're like, you're not allowed to die, dude. Yeah. You're not allowed to die. You're going to live. You're going to live a day longer than me. That's it.
What was that from Team America? He's like, I don't know. I could die. He's like, if you told me you'd never die, I'd have sex with you right now. I will never die.
That's easy. That's all I have to do.
That's all I do. Wow. And they had the most hilarious sex scene ever. Just the two dolls, and they're like shitting on each other's chests and like 69ing.
So terrible.
That movie's so good. They don't make movies like that anymore.
You can't.
London Raider 75. Damn, RJ's voice just reminded me of Beavis, which I'm afraid makes Soto butthead. Like, you know, I'm normally down to have, like, get poked and made fun of, but I don't think either one of us sound like either one of them at all.
No, I mean, I get nothing but head, so we'll go with that.
Yeah? That's too bad. You don't get that ass?
I mean...
Just head?
Sometimes the ass is a lot of work, bro. Just sit back and...
Get up there in age?
Yeah, you just get the phone out and just put your hand behind your head.
Just, just watch the head bob?
Yeah, whatever. No big deal.
All right, well, that's it for us. Thank you so much. Free agency kind of slowed down. If anything happens, we'll let you know. Live show for the draft for round one of the draft for sure at Thursday night. Potentially some more live reactions as we go as well, but of course keep you fully
abreast
of what's happening. And yeah, every week, everybody. Until then, next time,
knock on wood if you're with me.